answer any question on any topic. And I'll even put my glasses so I can see you guys. You should ask the first question. I put him on the spot, sorry.
Well, I could ask you a raise hand question. How many people read Uncle Rock? Because I know I wasn't the only person to assign it. Okay, good many. And one thing I forgot to mention is the news about Uncle Rock.
Oh, yeah.
originally appeared in The New Yorker and hasn't come out yet, but it's an O. Henry story for this year.
Yeah.
I have a question about Uncle Rock. So I hope this will sound dumb instead of...
I love dumb questions.
Yeah, instead of professor-like. So when Eric catches the ball, he's not sure whether Pete Guerrero hit it. So I'm from Los Angeles, and we never called him Pete. And the second question is... The second question is, when he goes to get the ball signed, it's the Phillies who sign it. Mm-hmm. I read the story, I just found all this really alarming, but I couldn't quite put it all together. And I was just wondering how conscious you were of sort of playing with those details.
I'm not sure which details. You didn't like it that it was the Phillies and not the Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, if I caught Pedro's, you know, ball, I'd want the Dodgers to sign it.
Well, he didn't know in the story.
Right.
He didn't know who caught it.
Right.
And they happened to be on the visitor's side. It's harder to be on the – if you've ever done that, actually.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to be in the Dodgers, and they wouldn't get in the bus.
Yeah.
They
that
go,
makes sense. They wouldn't get on the bus.
They go into cars,
yeah.
And they're harder to reach. They usually just escape in the cars, whereas the visitors hang out in the bus until all of them are on the bus. So practically speaking...
Makes sense. You see why it's a dumb question?
No, it's a good question. It caught me. I had to think about it.
The
and
Pete, though.
I'm like, sheesh.
Well, the other thing is...
The Pete, though, has got the... I'm with him.
Yeah. I
mean, no,
I always
people
thought,
call him Pete Guerrero.
I never heard him call Pete. Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I did.
I thought that was most interesting because it was Eric who was calling him Pete.
No, I think... he's called Pete.
Did he call himself Pete?
I don't know, but I know... I know people that call them Pete. I don't know what to say. Maybe they're just weirdos. I think in the you know, it's sort of like calling Ken Landro Kenny.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people do it. And around, you know, I'm thinking of construction people, guys I'd know, they would call him Pete, you know, like your friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm trying to think of if the sports, you know, the... Like a Vin Scully would have called him Pete. I don't know about that, but...
He might have, yeah.
Probably never once on mic.
Yeah.
Probably never once on mic. I don't remember ever hearing him say it on mic.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't
know
what to say.
Now I'll go to Professor. So, when Walter O'Malley brought the Dodgers to Los Angeles, he essentially eliminated a barrio to build Dodger Stadium. So how important is that as part of the backstory to that story?
Oh, God. That's another story. You know, it's funny, though, you bring that up. I mean, the story of Dodger Stadium, it was, there was a pretty well-known barrio, and it covered the original founding of L.A. was not too far from this little area called Chavez Ravine. And which became Chavez Ravine, and but you know the funny thing is, you know, I pitched this as a movie years ago,
really?
And it wasn't taken. I tried real hard to get that because I wanted to write that movie about mine. Maybe it was a stupid idea. I had my two main protagonists were a young Chicana activist from UCLA. And sort of a halfie whose father was, you know, kind of a rich business contractor who went to USC. And they're a couple, and they hit there right when the O'Malley news, when O'Malley's essentially in a helicopter above Chavez Ravine. And, you know, I had my own little goofy take on how to deal with that. But, you know, who's the guy that did the sting? The producer, He has two first names.
Yeah.
I hate when I can't remember. Anyway, he called me. He said, pitch me a story. And I pitched that one. I, damn, I'm in. I thought it's a no miss. He didn't like it. And I'm like, shit, that's, how can you be so stupid? And then, you know, the funny thing, a few years later, the guitarist Ry Cooder.
Yeah, that's a great album.
He did a, just in the air, I guess. Then a few years later, he did an album called Chavez Ravine.
Am I crazy, or was there an ESPN documentary about?
I'm
as
sure
part of that 30
been.
For 30, does anybody know about the Chavez Ravine and about the building of Dodger Stadium? You know that 30 for 30 series?
I've seen it, but I don't
think there's a documentary about the building and what it did.
You know, for me, the irony of that, and now we shouldn't talk about Dodgers here in. Although I have to say, I'm a Lakers person, and here you're Jerry West. I'm like, cool, Jerry West is here. Where is he? I love this place. I do. It's just like so cool to me. I couldn't believe the good luck
drive
I got.
The statue tomorrow.
The English department used to be down in the field house where you played.
Yeah, we'll go down there and chip off some of the floor for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some
yeah, do it.
I mean, with your writing, you cover so many issues through your characters. You have, you know, politics. You have relations between different cultures. And different economical aspects. So are any of these like any more important to you than the others, or are they just products of your characters?
Products of the characters, but I you know, it's like I'm glad you get this, you said that. I'm confident and it pleases me a lot of times. I go places and it seems like, you know, that, you know, I get so many stereotypes thrown at me all the time that they don't even say even anything close to you. I had one book and it's like, so, do you really think that way about women? I'm like, what? I mean, you know, all your macho characters, and they don't like women. I'm like, they don't like women, and they're, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I actually have the whole gamut. In my mind, anyway, it's the whole gamut. The only thing I'm not wide about is place. I tend to be confined to my own, you know, my own geographical range. I have like one story that I actually set in New York once, but it was about a character who was from the Southwest in New York, and that, you know, I sort of stick to that. I also in this collection I have a character who's from Los Angeles, go to Oaxaca, in fact, and you know, I tend to think that you are stuck with where you're, what earth you were, you know, where your seed is from is pretty much where you're stuck. And, you know, you can pretend, and people do it. I mean, Catherine Ann Porter, a very famous Texas writer, you know, didn't really like, you know, she liked to be very international, although her best stories are set in Texas. I think it tends to be, artists tend to, you know, except for the abstract artists, there are those kinds, but great literature tends to be local in a certain sense.
How important are the cadences, the rhythms in the language that you're using? Do you think of it while you're writing it, or is it just inherently the way you...
No, it totally is the thing I work the hardest on.
It's brilliant. It sounds so much like home, it's sick.
It matters to me more than anything there is. It's the sound. I, you know, I have my last novel was called The Flowers, and the thing I worked the hardest on was to make the language, you know, I mean, whether I did this successfully or not, it was, you know, in a lot of ways it was about a riot, and of course the riot that I knew the best was the Watts riot in 1965. I knew that riot. But I didn't want the book to be about that. I didn't want to write a historical novel. And so I wanted to not worry about the language, that the language would have to be from the, you know, the mid-60s. I wanted it to be blurred. I wanted it to be a story about a race riot. that, you know, anybody from L.A. would know where I dug it up. But I'm not interested in time. It's kind of one of my issues. And even this story, I battled, where am I going to put this? I don't like to be confined by time. I think good stories are not about whether it was written or set in 1981. I don't think that's the thing. So I worked really hard to get a language of a young Chicanito, a young Mexican-American, who could be both from that era and now. You would reckon that it was the hardest thing I had to do, is like find a language that could, and it worked. The only problem is that nobody understood what they kept. I don't know if this is, you know, so anyway, it worked. But I worked really hard on that. And voice matters. It's also true that in readings, of course, not my nonfiction, but my fiction, you pick what you're going to read. And it's a lot easier to read in first person things than third person. And, you know, so it's hard. I tend toward first person a lot because I like a voice. I hear that voice and work with that sound. I think the other thing is that my characters all, they're not always educated or smart educationally, but they're all smart. I just hate that people think that people that didn't go to school aren't smart. I think that is just so transparently untrue. Anybody that's been in the world and been with people, there are stupid people in universities, there are stupid people at construction sites, there are stupid people everywhere, and there are very smart people everywhere. And it just has nothing to do with what school. It is true that people that went to good schools tend to do certain jobs better than others. That, you know, in that sense, it's absolutely true. And the information, sort of like Jeopardy, you know, the people on Jeopardy are great. I'm dumb. I can't do it. I'm like, and, you know, they've answered 5 questions. Oh, I remember, you know, like that. But, yeah, I work real hard to keep my characters. I don't mean like they're smart, you know, smart, but I don't. I think it's disrespectful to think that people, you know, from other places aren't as smart as you. And I don't think any of my characters are stupid. So I work really hard to make sure that even if they don't use this, a Latinate version of the word or something, that they come off like their ideas. Maybe they don't have the this word or that word. Maybe they have an accent or they say it, but they're not saying something stupid. That's, you know, the way they say it has nothing to do with what they're saying. And I think anybody, like I say, anybody that's been around people, you know, worked with people, you see it all the time. I mean, wisdom has nothing to do with knowledge.
Mother, Dad.
Yeah.
First of all, thank you for stopping here at WBU. And now that you're speaking about language, it is a common belief that sometimes including phrases or words from foreign languages in your writing may alienate your audience or your potential audience. What's your opinion about it?
Well, it's a battle, and especially it's a battle in the Mexican-American community. There's been a lot of, over the years, I think it's, well, you know, people have less problems when it's French. You know, it's noticeably not as a big a issue when somebody uses a French word. It's kind of cool. And, you know, in German, they don't really mind, even though everybody feels too stupid if it's a German word. But I noticed that people tend to get most upset when it's a Spanish word. And mostly the people that get most upset are from, like, Arizona. or Alabama, it seems like, lately. And, you know, they're worried that some encroachment on their Americanism is coming in. But in terms of readers, I mean, you know, bad shit is bad. And some people just don't know when too much is too much. I mean, even a French reader that is writing for an American audience, If he doesn't know that he shouldn't have a paragraph in French, well, then he won't sell too well. I mean, that's his choice. If finally his artistic decision is to have paragraphs or phrases in French that bore people, and a lot of our, you know, a lot of our writers do that, make that mistake. Some words, like, do I need to translate taco? Do I, you know, enchilada, we know. I have a book called Gritos, and a grito is a, you know, pretty, it's kind of like a taco. It's not really translatable. And I think you can teach a word now and again, and, you know, my hope is that someday that word becomes unitalicized, you know, like a taco. You know, it's sort of fun, even in this book, what words don't get italicized, the copy editors decide aren't italic, you don't need to italicize. And it's like, well, that's weird. You mean papaya doesn't need to be italicized, but mango does? And, you know, what, is that because Americans don't eat that much of the, you know, I mean, it's just funny the way things happen. It's just a curious phenomena. But, yeah, we're going through a little phase in this country, and it, I mean, I actually do understand it, you know, like, one of the things that happened in Orange County, California, and it's happening in Dallas, is all these people, they want a whole, in Orange County, they, you know, having a building boom. And they're, you know, Orange County, California is one of the most right-wing, sort of the home of the John Birch Society, even though it's just Knott's Berry Farm, and Knott's was like a, you know, I don't know what society he was in, but it was worse than the Birchers. And, but they wanted all these buildings, so their weakness is they're cheap. So what do? They hired a bunch of Mexicans. Mexicanos came. They work. They work hours and hours and hours and hours, and they come with their family. And then 15 years later, guess what? They're the mayor. You go to Anaheim and Orange County, it's over. You're welcome. You know, and Dallas is going through this, Houston's going through, I mean, you know, and the right thing to do is just send, you know, it's like everybody, I can just, what's wrong with it? You know, it's just a beautiful thing, you know, immigration and change, and, you know, this whole thing that's going on, you just have to embrace the good, you know, eliminate the bad, but embrace. We're all doing good for each other. We're building really good people. You know, anybody that, yeah, anyways, going on a high horse here. Yeah. About corn, yeah. Well, that was, you know, that's my work. And that's what I do as a writer, and that's what the hardest thing I did. And I wanted that, and, you know, yeah, I worked real hard. I did have to go. I went and talked to, you know, people that taught me about the different kinds of corn. In the entire essay, which is a lot longer than got published even, there's a whole bunch, you know, different kinds of corn there are. And I mean, I learned so much. But, you know, it was utterly fascinating to me because, you know, we were going through this, you know, horrible anti-immigration, anti-Mexican. It's nothing new, but it seems more prominent than ever. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, that Iowa, the most Americana state of all, has two products. And one is corn, which is utterly Mexican. In every respect, it's the most Mexican thing there is from Mexico. There is nothing more Mexican than corn. It, you know, in Africa, it first came up. That was the conquest. The other thing is the pig. That's pretty Iowa. Well, guess where the pig comes from? The pig is mostly Spain. And that came on boats. They brought that, and, you know, all the pork stuff really come. You know, Pizarro, one of the great conquerors, his family is a pig, you know, big pig family estate in Extremadura. And, you know, those are a lot of the conquistadores. That region is pig farming, which, you know, think about what Spain, what, I mean, if you've never had jamón serrano, you've never eaten. That is delicious. They know their pig. And there you go. It's the two most interesting things about Iowa have to do with the conquest, and it's just sort of a, and it really just, to me, it tells you, look, we're all here. Stop it. We're all here. We've been doing these things for so long. We're all here. And what's wrong with you guys? Just relax. And look how pretty the men are. Look how pretty the women are. Are you nuts? I mean, calm down. And I do. I think the corn, you know, I mean, if you go to Mexico, you see the corn. You know, you go to the museums, you see it everywhere, and you realize, oh, my God, that is so nuts. Because we see it as so white bread, so, like, so American. And I just think it's utterly ironic. And I thought that was the most incredible thing of all. I knew when I was going there. Because the guy, Matt, wanted me to go to the slaughter, the plants, which there's a whole, you know, not too long after, there was just scandal after scandal about that. And I'm like, no way, this is what I want to write. And I knew there would be a good story. My agent wanted me to write a whole book, but I can write 35. That's my problem and strength, is that I put in 35 pages, and somebody else could make a lot of money and make it 200, but to me, it'd also be more boring. Yeah. In a what?
In a compilation.
I'm going to put it in a book soon, but it was published, a version of it, in a book called State by State. It's this, I don't know what they call it, but it was a sort of a WPA book, but it was published, 3 years ago.
It's good.
It's good, and I also published it in a magazine called Callaloo.